Today's reading is from Daniel chapter 4, verse 1 to verse 18. King Nebuchadnezzar, to the peoples, nations, and the men of every language who lived in all the world, may you prosper greatly. It is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous. I had a dream that made me afraid. As I was lying in my bed, the images and visions that passed through my mind terrified me. So I commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be brought before me to interpret the dream for me. When the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners came, I told them the dream, but they could not interpret it for me. Finally, Daniel came into my presence, and I told him the dream. He is called Belshazzar, after the name of my God, and the spirit of the God, and the spirit of the Holy Ghost is in him. I said, Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, I know that the spirit of the Holy Ghost is in you, and no mystery is too difficult for you. Here's my dream, interpreted for me. These are the visions I saw while lying in my bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height were enormous. The tree grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it, the beasts of the field found shelter, and the birds of the air lived in its branches. From it, every creature was fed. In the visions I saw while lying in my bed, I looked, and there before me was a messenger, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He called in loud voice, cut down the trees and trim off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches. But let the stump and its roots, bound with iron and bronze, remain in the ground in the grass of the field. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal, till seven times pass by for him. The decision is announced by messengers. The holy ones declare the verdict, so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and gives them to anyone he wishes and sets over them the lords of men. This is a dream that I, King Nebuchadnezzar, had. Now, Belshazzar, tell me what it means, for none of the wise men in my kingdom can interpret it for me, but you can, because the spirit of the Holy Ghost is in you.
Thank you. 18 months ago, my wife had a problem with her car. She has a Renault Zoe, nothing to do with our younger daughter. A Renault Zoe in Ireland is a totally electric car. And we're trying to do our bit for the environment. We're going to have to do a lot more work on electric cars for that to continue. But there was a problem, and the heating wasn't working. Now here, that's no issue. In Northern Ireland, that's a massive issue, particularly during the months of July through to roughly July of the following year. You need heat in the car. And we had real trouble getting through to the garage. You'd ring the garage, what's wrong, ma'am? She explained what was wrong. I'll get the mechanic to phone you back. Never phone back. And this went on for some time, and eventually one day, she got through, and I was at home, and I could hear her on the phone. And the conversation went something like this: look, I've got a problem with the heating, and I'd like it looked at. Sure, bring it in, and we'll take a look at it. Now, just to make you aware, it's £250 to run a test with the air conditioning unit, and we need to do that. Oh, well, don't need to worry about that because my car's under warranty. No, that's not covered under warranty. But I was told I wouldn't have to pay anything if it was under warranty. Oh, you're going to have to pay the £250. But I don't want to pay the £250 because the unit's not working and it's up to you to find out what's wrong. Well, I can't you're going to have to pay the £250. And it was a bit of a standoff. And eventually I heard my wife say, so you're telling me I have a car that's still under warranty to you and you're not going to fix it for free. I'm going to have to pay £250 for you to test something that might come back and say, there's no problem with the air conditioning unit. Yes. Well, I don't want to pay that. Well, there's nothing I can do. And she said, so you're basically saying go away. That's your words. So there's a hang up, and that was it. And she came in and she stood in my study for a moment or two, and then she went, hang on a minute. And I thought, oops. So I heard her going off, get her phone again, and she said, hello, yes. I would like to speak to whoever's in charge. 2 minutes later, there was an apology. The car was booked in to be fixed. There was no fee going to be paid. In fact, he didn't know what the mechanic was talking about because they didn't have the machine to do that in their branch anyway, but it was resolved. Who's in charge is a question that comes up regularly in life. In the UK, it's being asked all the time at the minute about Brexit. Who is running this place? Because it seems like a complete and utter disaster. If, like many men, you support a football team in the UK, most are probably asking the same. Who is running my club? And I'm a Chelsea supporter, and that's a fairly frequent question that is asked. We also ask it the likes of the car thing, when something goes wrong. Who's in charge here? We usually ask it when things don't appear to be clear, or when things are not going the way we want them to go. It's very helpful when it's minor things like a football team. It's crucial when it's important things like you need something fixed. It's essential when it comes to our lives of faith and our discipleship and following Jesus Christ. Because without the perspective of the Lord in our lives, when certain things happen, it can throw us completely. And I've seen it happen on many, many occasions. People with what I would have regarded very strong, very developed, mature faith, something comes along and it's like a punch in the jaw. And down they go. And they become confused and frustrated. Why has this happened to me? What have I done? Have I done something wrong? Is there something not right in my life? And that becomes a breeding ground for doubts and questions that can leave us, as the psalmist said, almost like we're a wave in the sea, blown and tossed about in every kind of direction. And then you end up in the that place of despair. How long, O Lord, how long are you going to let this go on for? The passage in Daniel 4 is very helpful for us. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole passage. I'm really going to focus on verse 17, which comes near the end of the reading that we had for us. Daniel was one of the young Jewish nobility who was taken off to Babylon. They were very good at how they organized their empire. When they took over an area, they would get rid of a lot of people. They would ship the wealthy and the brightest back to Babylon, and there they would educate them, give them the best, and then send them off to other parts of the empire to be local governors and stuff, ensuring that in that locality a sort of banding together of the remnants could happen, because the guy in charge had nothing to do with that. He didn't know the place, he didn't have any history with the place. And so he wouldn't feel any passion for uprising against the empire. And then they left the poorest within the local area where they'd been. Daniel was one of the ones who was shipped off to become an overseer of a province somewhere else. It was done under the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, there was a name to strike fear into the heart of anyone. A man of immense power and wealth, as the world measures it. He was the longest reigning emperor. He was the most powerful monarch of the Neo-Babylonian Empire. There's an engraving found on a royal inscription that was found in 1901, and it lists him as King of Babylon, king of Sumer and Akkad, king of the universe. Now, there's a business card you want to keep if ever there was one. In fact, I dare somebody to go and get new business cards printed that even says King of Hong Kong and see and get, start giving them out and see what people's reactions would be. It takes a brass neck to claim that you're a king beyond even your local territory. It takes a brass neck to claim you're a king in your own, unless, of course, you are a king in your own place. So when we get to Daniel 4, we discover something very interesting. Nebuchadnezzar was just a human being. And we know that because it only takes a dream and he is shaken. I'm sure we've all had those nights where we toss and turn in bed. It may be something that's coming in the next few days. It may be something that has happened. It may be one of those irrational times when we fear something that hasn't happened, isn't likely to happen, but we're afraid anyway. Or we've been upset by something or whatever. We feel unnerved, uneasy, and that's certainly what was happening to Nebuchadnezzar here. It's reckoned that this happened about at the 34th, 35th year of his reign. Around that time, he had recently conquered Egypt. And so in a sense, in some ways, it was done and dusted. He had climbed the ladder. He was at the top of his game. He was at the peak of his career. He had the fighting was done. He'd been victorious in them all. He was enjoying the fruits of his labours. And indeed, if you were to read on and the fulfilment of this dream, that's the very moment it happened when he walked out in his palace one evening and looked out and said, "Look at all I have made for myself." He was the king of Babylon, the king of Sumer and Akkad, and he believed himself to be the king of the universe. Yet the dream, just a dream, not even another human being, took him to a place outside and beyond of himself. And he didn't know what to do. What am I to do? What does this mean? I don't know. That's when we say, I don't know, it means we don't know everything. That's maybe a little sign of what you could call weakness or something. And suddenly the king of the universe is struggling and needs help. There are times when we think in life we've got things sussed, that we're in control, in charge. And something comes along and challenges us. It may be a life experience. It could be, as here, where God's wanting to remind us, I want you to know who's in charge here. Nebuchadnezzar ultimately turns to Daniel. In fact, it's interesting, if you noticed in the reading, the first people he brought in were the magicians and soothsayers and stuff, and he told them the dream. A couple of chapters earlier, he has a dream and he brings in the soothsayers and the magicians and stuff, and he says, I want you to interpret my dream. Great, tell us what the dream is. No, because if you're genuine, you'll know what my dream is before I tell you. And if you don't know, I'm going to kill you. And they were going, you know, you've got to give us something here. But here he's very gracious towards them and tells them the dream, but they can't answer. And he turns to Daniel. And we get an outline of what is going on because it is recorded for us, not in the words of Daniel, but in the words of Nebuchadnezzar himself. It's in the form of a royal declaration that he describes his circumstances. And in it, and in verse 17, he makes a few statements that helps us to answer a number of questions about who's in charge. So the first thing that we have is who is in charge. Now, in Babylon, in the Empire of Babylon, everybody knew who was in charge. If you walked down the street and stopped any random person and said, who's in charge here? First of all, they would get very nervous, and then very quickly they would answer, Nebuchadnezzar's in charge. Just the same as if you went to Iraq some years back under Saddam Hussein. or Chile under General Pinochet, or Uganda under Idi Amin. You knew. You didn't question. You understood the way it is. This is the authority here. Yet Nebuchadnezzar, in his royal proclamation, he says the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth. Hang on, I thought Nebuchadnezzar was the king of the universe. You know, there's only a minute part of the universe, all those stars in the sky and all. What's he saying here? He is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth. It's because Nebuchadnezzar has already worked out, and he's obviously recounting this a number of years later, that he's clearly not the one who's in charge. That there is one who is more higher, more powerful than him, the Most High, the Lord. He knew, I can't help myself here. I've conquered kingdoms, I've built palaces and cities, but I can't get this dream out of my head, and I can't explain what it means. And he asks Daniel for help. When you ask someone for help, you acknowledge you're needing in them something which you do not have, something that they are greater in. When I was at school, I went through maths, and I was fine up to what we used to call the O-levels, which is the exam you sat at 16, no problem. And then they introduced this other subject called additional maths. Now, in additional maths, they seem to bring in squiggles and letters and stuff like that. It looked like something I saw in Star Trek. I didn't understand it, and I could not, for the life of me, work out much of additional math. I got statistics and stuff like that, but particularly mechanics. I just hadn't a clue what was going on. And so next door to us lived a guy who lectured in economics in Coleraine University, which is close to where I grew up. He was a lecturer in economics, so obviously I knew stuff about maths. And in he would come, and the poor man would sit and try and work it out. But my dad was saying, look, I have no idea either. I can't explain this. Could you help him with it? I don't know. I can't do. I need you. Nebuchadnezzar didn't just turn to Daniel. He said, the spirit of the holy gods is in him. He saw a power in Daniel that wasn't of Daniel himself. But he wanted to tap into that power. When we need help, particularly with the bigger things in life, it's the Lord that we need. It's the one who, he's the one who we need to turn to. How many times do we see that happening in the life of Christ? Blind Bartimaeus, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. The paralyzed man who was brought in. What do you want? I want to be healed. Jairus, I need your help. I need you to come to my home and see my daughter. And it's the same for us. We need the Lord's help in all that goes on in our lives. And I've, in all the many years that I'm now beginning to rack up, I've seen it so many times. People have tried to sort their own things out, or they've gone to gurus or help books or whatever to sort their own things out. And the same thing, it just adapts and remorphs itself. And they're still struggling with themselves. I find true freedom in Christ. I remember a lady, she was the caretaker of a church I used to be in, and she was one of those people whose face told the story of her life. There were wrinkles deeply engraved on her life, and her life had been one of a lot of problems. Her son was killed in a car accident. The very first time I landed in Hong Kong, as I landed here in 1993, he was getting into a car to go down the road, having just said goodbye to his mum, and 90 seconds later he was dead. And when I got home, I remember the day sitting in our house, And we were chatting, and she turned to me and she said, "Peter, I need Jesus today. He's the only one. He's the only one left who can help me." The story of her life was rewritten on her face. I'm not claiming a dramatic healing of wrinkles or anything like that, but her face physically changed from that day forward, and her spirit was lifted, and she learned to live. And the pain couldn't go away because it had happened, but she learned to live it, and it turned into something that made her stronger and full of joy and deeper in her walk with the Lord. That's who we need in our lives. And as believers, for those of us who are believers, we need to demonstrate that. We need to be the Daniel. Where people might say the spirit of something is in them, and whatever it is, I want that in myself. And that's fine if they don't completely understand. But as they get closer to us and it gives us the opportunity, we can explain and give the answer for why we are the way we are. So that's the first thing. Who's in charge? The Lord, the Most High. Secondly, and you'll be glad to know I get a bit shorter as we go along. Secondly, when does he rule? I remember a very poignant day. In 1999, we had been married for nearly 10 years and no child had come. And we'd gone on holiday to Thailand and we came home and Heather was pregnant. And we just thought, this is the moment, this is the perfect moment. And we were so excited. And the day she went to have her first meeting with the midwife, which is the way it happens in Northern Ireland, was the day she also had an appointment with the gynecologist who had been treating her. And we thought, happy days. As we say, kill two birds with one stone and that. The way it landed was she went to the midwife first and they went, great. And they went through the normal procedure and they said, let's work out a date here, an expectant date. And it was the 6th of May. So our number one would have been 19 tomorrow. And then she went to the gynae guy, and when he did the scan, he went, there's a problem here. And it ultimately led to a miscarriage. He gave her a week. He said, let's give it a week and see what happens. And the following week we went, and in his words, it's over. And she was prepared to go into theatre, and I said, look, I'll go out and phone our parents and let them know. When I phoned the parents, and as I come back in, a 19-year-old out of our congregation, our church, who had grown up in the church, was walking out the door carrying her newborn baby. In her words, an accident that happened one night after a disco. And we met, and I went, oh! I said, oh, right, and this is your baby, and congratulations, and granny was there, and I'm sure you're happy, and so on, and smiled, and hugged, and so on, and they went on, and I went and got into the lift. I remember the lift doors closing, and I think, do you know, Lord, do you know you didn't have to let that happen? Why would you do that to me at this day, on this moment? I just don't understand. Look what Nebuchadnezzar says. The decision is announced. The Most High is sovereign. I thought on that day, where are you? And Nebuchadnezzar speaks very interestingly in the present tense. And he's speaking about that years later. He is now. He is here now and continues to be now. God isn't simply the one that we look back to and tell the stories of the past and sing our hymns and isn't he wonderful what he used to do in the past? Neither is he the one that we hope in the future, and I desperately hope he'll do this one day. I desperately hope he'll return. I desperately hope that he'll resolve the problems of the world when he brings his kingdom that is to come. He's the Lord of today as well. For us right now, where we are, sitting here in this hotel, what we're going to and what's maybe going through our minds now. He is the Lord of heaven and earth right now. And now, and so on. For the exiles in those days, facing decades still in Babylon, he was in control at that moment, even though they were looking around going, where is he? And for you and for me today, he rules. No matter what's going on in the world, no matter what's going on in our lives, God is always, always in control. All things work together for the good of those who know and love him. Thirdly, where does he rule? It says the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth. That's fascinating that Nebuchadnezzar would say that. Because he's saying the Most High is sovereign over this kingdom that I built, my empire, that I'm inscribed in the coins as the owner of and the ruler over. The Most High is sovereign over Babylon. It's interesting that Daniel would come to hear this as well, because Nebuchadnezzar is saying the Most High is not only sovereign over what you would have called Judah and Israel and Jerusalem and the likes, he's also sovereign here in Babylon as well, where you think you've been removed to, where you think you're now no longer with God. He's somewhere lying in the ruins of Jerusalem. He is here. He is real and powerful and authoritative here. You know, they used to say, by the rivers of Babylon we sat and wept. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? But God was saying, there's no strange land to me. Every land is mine. Everyone is under my authority. Nowhere are you out of the Lord's presence. Psalm 139. If I go up to the heavens, he's there. If I go down to the depths, he's there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, and if I fly from Northern Ireland to Hong Kong, he's there. And you'll see evidence that he is there. Joshua, I will be with you. Moses, I will be with you. King David, I will be with you. To the disciples, I will be with you. Constantly, he's affirming, I rule wherever. And we need to remember that by taking God at his word. It's one thing to sing the songs that proclaim it. It's another thing to actually acknowledge it and live it out in our lives. Believing it. Acknowledging him wherever we are. Praying. I'll be honest, that day in that lift, I didn't acknowledge him. And it felt, looking back, it was awful. Now, and sometimes I think these things happen as we learn, so that we learn as we go along also. Now, when it happens, I try to turn immediately and go, okay, Lord, you're over this. So I acknowledge that now. What are you saying? What are you doing in the midst of this place or this time? So it's in the boardroom, it's in the classroom, it's on the MTR, it's on the doctor's waiting room, it's in your apartment, it's with your families, wherever they may be elsewhere in the world. He is there. He is present. And at the heart of your deepest joys and your most painful heartaches, at the moment of your great anticipations and excitement, he is there. Because he's the God of life and he engages with us in our real lives, the nitty-gritty lives that we live each and every day. As the years have passed, I've learned that and relearned it and relearned it. And I've also learned a lack of a visual manifestation of God's presence is actually irrelevant. He doesn't have to show himself, woohoo, here I am. He doesn't have to do that. He just works there, and sometimes it's in the benefit of hindsight that we see that. Jesus said of God's Spirit, you can't see where he's coming from or where he's going. And so what I do is I put markers down in life. Moments, significant moments, where God did something. And it's like I stamp it in my brain. In the Old Testament, they would have put up a pile of stones. You often hear that, where they erected a pile of stones, a marker, so that in that place at that time, God acted. And so I have little markers through my life. And one of them would be the day that Kim, our older girl, we started to realise she's ours. And we realised it about 20 months beforehand. And I'll not go into it because it's a very long story, but a number of things from random part of our lives, unconnected completely, all came together and landed and exploded at that moment. And so whenever you have those days, and in ministry you have those days, and you've elders meetings, you come home and you go, what'd you put me with those elders for, kind of thing. In those moments where you maybe question, you go, but I can't, because I look at that marker and I know on that day at that time the Lord did something in my life. He demonstrated his power and authority. Where are your markers in life? And finally, how does he rule? Nebuchadnezzar said he gives kingdoms to anyone he wishes. Now, in the modern world, sometimes that statement really stretches us. He gives kingdoms to whoever he wishes. But what it is telling us is this: he rules with complete freedom. He's not bound by our expectations or any politics or natural laws or social conventions or even time. No one tells him what he should do and when he should do it. He does give kingdoms, another translation is, to the lowliest of peoples. And that's quite a statement for someone like Nebuchadnezzar to make. And the church is evident of that. The church, the built body and people of God, are bigger than any emperor or empire could dream of. The comings and goings of history. I love to go to the British Museum in London, and there's a little, tiny little clay pot. It's called the Cyrus Cylinder. And it's actually the sort of what was about to come in the story of the Israelites following the Daniel part in the exile. And the Cyrus Cylinder is the declaration in which he announces that the Jews are allowed to return to Jerusalem and rebuild it. And I would say to folks in church, there in the British Museum, you have the Bible. That's history. That is real. There it is. You could pick it up. You'd probably get arrested, but you could pick it up and look at it. And that is from then, and that is the words of a man who had no leanings towards God, but God with complete freedom said, let my people return home. And Sarah said, do you know, I've had an idea. Let's let the Jews return to Jerusalem and rebuild their city. History dances to the music of the Lord and the contribution of his goals. All of it, the good bits of it and the difficult bits of it, are all coming together to lead to the day of Christ's return and the establishment of the kingdom and the recreation of everything. And there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. And the Lord has built his church with people who have been persecuted and hounded and abused and voiceless, who have been killed and disregarded and laughed at and written off. And still he has built his church. He's not limited in any way. Not science, nor the words of other people, nor borders, nor hospital walls, or walls built by anger or hurt. He's totally free and operates totally freely and does his work in everything. So I finish with a question. Do you know his charge today? We live in a broken world. There are many, many problems in the world. Jesus said, take heart, I've overcome the world. We live in a world where we as believers come up against a kingdom that's not made of flesh and blood, but is the dark forces at work in the heavenly realms. But Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And in John's Gospel said, and the light has shone in the darkness, and the darkness has never consumed it. God's charge, his authority, blossoms wherever it's submitted to. Jesus said, come to me. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He doesn't want us to submit to him so that he can sort of put his foot on our necks and hammer us down and said, now I'll show you. I'll show you what authority really is. He takes what puts its foot on our necks upon himself, sin and the fallenness of our lives and the brokenness of the world. He takes that upon himself on the cross, and he gives us his grace and his forgiveness and his freedom and his life. Not overbearing. Not overbearing in any way. So today, I encourage you, demonstrate the Lord's charge in your life. Allow it, give it opportunities to express itself and reveal itself. And if you don't yet know him, turn to him. He is the best. He is the greatest. All the great things that are written about him, he's that and so much more. He has done wonders in my life. Wonders that I can't explain. Wonders that I know I don't deserve. And I don't mean that in a scripted way. I really genuinely don't deserve some of the wonderful things, including those little girls. I don't deserve them, but he has given them to me and more. Let's pray together.